closer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hold That Thought. My name's John Samuel, and I'm going to be your host. Before we get started, let's take a quick second and hear a message from our main sponsor. This podcast is sponsored by CJS Productions, providing live entertainment for events, festivals, and venues. Music is our passion, and good music is meant to be shared. Find us online at cjslivemusic.com. Welcome, everyone. Episode 16 with Forrest Hoffer. Parallel to all my previous episodes, this was a blast to record. Anytime I get to sit down with someone from the local music industry and discuss the biz, it's a good day. There's always something to learn. In this episode with Forrest, we rapped about his latest album, which is titled The Temporary Nature of Things, visually appealing album artwork, comparing and contrasting Tampa and Nashville's music scene, original gigs, touring, and the marriage of music and art, and much, much more. After listening and editing this podcast, one thing really stuck out with me, and it was something that Forrest had mentioned: self-talk. I failed to elaborate more on this during the actual interview, but I feel that it's important to discuss if we are all going to start accomplishing our goals, producing more records, getting more content out there, filming videos. I want to see you guys get on top of your game and promote and push and get it out there. And I'm here to help. And one of the things Forrest said about self-talk was, you are either building yourself up or you're beating yourself up. Self-talk, is, if cultivated right, can lead us to accomplishing all of our goals. The majority of podcasts that I listen to, every single one of the hosts, they promote self-talk. They're all about it. They're way behind it. There's a doctor that stands out. I get a weekly blog from him, and his name is Dr. Amen. And he created an acronym for self-talk, and it's called ANT Therapy. And this acronym stands for Automatic Negative Thoughts. Anytime an automatic negative thought appears in your head, think about it like an ant and eradicate it like an ant and just get it out of the way, because it won't help you accomplish your goals. If you want to book that next big show or the festival that's coming up or finish recording that your latest album, you gotta have the motivation to do that. And by having the motivation, you gotta start working on the small things, such as your daily thoughts. This is crucial if you wanna get better. I hope this tidbit helps. It's helped me with my podcast, with my writings, with my business. And like I said earlier, I really want to see you guys take your game to the next level in 2018. Without further ado, here is episode 16 with Forrest Hoffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hold That Thought. My name is John Samuel, and I'm going to be your host. Today, I'm joined with Forrest Hoffer, episode 16. Forrest, how you doing?
Magical. Doing magical.
Awesome. Thank you very much for joining me in my makeshift studio. That's the theme of this podcast, until I can actually get a real studio and with less interruptions and cat allergies and dogs and all that fun stuff. But it'll come one of these days. Absolutely. How are you doing today?
Man, I'm great. It's a beautiful day in Florida. What is it, 70, 68 degrees outside? Not a cloud in the sky.
It's gorgeous. This weather is amazing. Carrie and I were up this morning, and the first thing she said, can you wait for Desta to get up? I want to take Lake to the beach. So they drove to the beach, and they at 6:15 in the morning, and checked out the supermoon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the blue supermoon eclipse. And she said, the beach was packed at 6:15. People were down there checking out the supermoon and the eclipse. I had the pleasure of seeing it outside. It was pretty cool, but I don't think it probably did as much justice as being on the beach. But that is definitely the luxury we have living in Florida.
Absolutely.
Great. So I'm really happy, excited to have you in the studio for multiple reasons. I want to start talking about your latest album, The Temporary Nature of Things.
Yeah.
When was that released?
That was released at the end of 2017, literally right at the end. maybe December. Honestly, I don't remember what day, but early in December or late November, something like that.
Cool. Like that. I got to hear a couple songs, and you actually bought me a CD, so I'm going to dive into that later. And one of the things you and I were talking about beforehand is your artwork on the album.
Yeah.
It's so visually appealing.
Thank you.
It's something that I've seen at shows before where I've caught a poster and the poster's made me go back and seen an artist I knew nothing about.
Right.
Can you take us on that trip, that magical trip with your artwork?
Yeah. I was visiting a friend in South Tampa, and she just kind of had artwork up in her house, and a piece struck me. It was a half skull face of like this girl, and it was a girl's face, half skull, half alive. And I thought that was really interesting, and I said, hey, can you paint that of me? And maybe I'll be able to use it for something. And she said, absolutely. This person, her name is Sammy Yun, and I knew her from the bar she worked at. So I didn't know she was an artist until I was over and I saw a couple pieces. So people have some hidden talents. Hers was hidden. And I think she does incredible work. I think it was a couple months later, she painted it and gave it to me. And at that point, I didn't intend to use it for an album cover. I just had the piece and thought I'd use it at some point. And then as I was brainstorming for album covers, that's one of the ideas I used was that that image of the half skull, half alive, half dead. And for me, that kind of resonated. I had all these kind of concepts coming around. What am I going to title the album? What is the thread through all the songs? And the temporary nature of things, for some reason, just kept coming to mind. So then that with the half skull face, half alive, it just kind of all worked together.
Worked in, yeah. And then the triangle really completes it.
Yeah, I was messing around on my phone and kind of put that together. And then a local graphic artist named Palmer Holmes, I gave that image to him and asked him to kind of expound on it. And he turned it into what you see now.
It's beautiful. That is great. Do you think we need to get back to that visual image? You're surrounded in the local music community. Do you see artists or musicians not expanding on their visual graphics with their posters, with their CDs, with their marketing?
I mean, one of my buddies, JT Brown, who put out a record this last year, he used a painting of a woman for his cover, which I thought was really nice and fit. And so my experience with people that are close to me has been, and Tony Casori is another good friend of mine. He's big into art. We have a friend out in LA named Shark Tooth, and he does giant murals. There's one in St. Pete of his work. He's really well known. And I think art and music are this, they live together in the same world, and they support each other, and I don't know why you'd have them separate.
They coincide, and we tend to forget about that.
Yeah, they tell the two sides of the same story, kind of. You have the audible one and the visual one, and it kind of makes it complete. I mean, that's why music videos work. That's a whole other thing of art that I think, music videos are where people are expanding their brand right now, just as much as anything else. Something I'll be doing next. I just scheduled it for February, early February to do.
Well, you're ahead of the game because you have some great videos up already online.
Yeah, of me, but not anything artistic. That's what I like to the artistic expression of the song.
That's a great start.
Yeah.
That's a great start. What's the process like when... Is your brain going full speed thinking about what you're gonna, how you're gonna create that music video?
Actually, my budget dictates how much my brain can do for that kind of thing. And being a local artist, I'm not gonna spend $10,000 on a music video. That's just not what's going to happen. I'm not gonna travel to, you know, some foreign place to have these beautiful visuals. The song that I'm doing the music video for is called Karma's Kids, and. I talked to one videographer about heading out to like Tibet or something. You know, he was like, "Yeah, let's fly out there. Let's get these visuals." I'm like, man, you're you're nuts. Can't do that. So I have two different versions of Karma's Kids on this record. It's really two separate records. It's the Buck Sessions, which I've included in my hard copies as a deluxe part of the temporary nature of things. But I've decided to go with a simpler acoustic version of Karma's Kids for a music video because it'll be easier just to capture me. There's a lot. I think it's easier for me to emote as an individual looking into the camera. I'll be the plan is to have me kind of walking through a wooded area, looking at the camera and letting the videographer that I'm using. His name is Javi. He's in Lakeland to let him do his artwork by grabbing the visuals to really express the song.
I've seen some cool videos with some intricate follow focus of the musician.
Yes.
And it's cool because you're almost taking a journey with the musician.
Yeah.
In your example, you're going through the woods. That brings back so many memories for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you can tell so each person can interpret the song completely different.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be really cool. I like to draw myself, and I do a lot of artwork. Nothing that, you know, I got anywhere, but I like the visual aspect of it, and I like to see musicians adding more aspect into it. Years ago, we did a live painting, which was really cool. We had a guy named Matt and Callahan. And he's a big guy in Tampa. He does. He did Cigar City's labels.
Wonderful.
He did all the murals. He's done a lot of murals, like at Splitsville and Channel Side. And he showed up in West Chase, and we did this live painting, and we had Daniel B. Marshall playing. And he was drawing to the music.
Okay.
And it was just a it was a fun time. Everyone got into it. People are kind of like, why is a band playing? Why is a musician playing and the artist going?
Right.
So it was interesting. I don't know why we didn't continue it. It's tough. And this is a good entryway into what I really want to pick your brain about.
Okay.
The Tampa Bay area compared to Nashville.
Got it.
So here's what I interpret. I talk to a lot of musicians. We currently work with over 100 musicians. Work with a lot of touring artists. There is a ton of work in Florida, a ton of work in Tampa. But more importantly, this town is saturated with phenomenal musicians. Great artists. What are we lacking that Nashville doesn't have besides the notoriety?
What are we lacking? That Nashville is not lacking? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. What? How can we step up our game? How can we become Nashville?
Got it.
How do we get put on the map? Because if you take out the individual players and you start looking at bands and players from all across all genres, whether it be La Lucha and the Jazz, singer-songwriter Josh Riley, Folk, okay, or who, you know, bands all across the area. There's some really talented individuals. How do we catch up to them?
Got it.
What can we do to better our scene?
I mean,
Because you lived in Nashville for how long?
I did. I was there for a year, 2015, 2016. I moved there because another bigger artist said I needed to move there and that he would help me get integrated into the scene with songwriting. That didn't happen, which I find is kind of common in Nashville. There's a lot of, let's do this, and then not doing. That was my experience. But in regards Tampa to Nashville comparison, I think this is where the artists live and they write and they do life and they have a normal life. I think in Nashville is where they go and they're trying to write hits. They're trying to write hits over and over again for a business. It's not an art, it's a business. And I think that's the biggest difference. And I don't want us to be that. I don't want Tampa to be Nashville in that regard. The thing I love about Tampa is that it's artists doing life and creating art together and performing and really connected to people and connected to what it is to be a human being and writing about that. Whereas in Nashville, it's not about, I think it's less about writing about the human condition in their personal experience and more about...
More writing for sync licensing or...
Yes.
Got it.
Which is fine. I mean, that's a business. And I love the idea of making a lot of money by writing songs. Love the idea of having my songs on the radio and you know, sharing in that regard. I'm not pushing towards that. The record that I made for the people that I do life with that will hear it. And I didn't make it for some guy in South Dakota that's going to hear it on the radio. That's not what happened.
That's a really interesting take. And the reason why I bring it up is because all my conversations I've spoken with people is all the local guys, they'll be talking about a band or talking about someone. They're like, God, I want to see a show and this guy's really, really good. And it always pops in my head because I read a lot of blogs on the music business, read a lot of journals, and I'm constantly hearing Nashville.
It's
if you want to make it, you have to go to Nashville. And I don't believe that you have to move anywhere if you want to make it.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case, especially in our world that's so connected at this point. I think that getting to Nashville, moving there is kind of like getting in line, and you can get lucky maybe and get past the front, but really it's about being there for years and paying your dues. They have a giant cover scene there, you know, that is all tip based from tourists that come through. We have a giant cover scene here that is bar fueled, people drinking. Bars pay the money to have the live music, so people come and drink.
Cover scene's huge.
Yeah,
cover scene's really big, and it pays.
Yeah, I've been making my living off of it for the last 7 years.
It pays really well. I just finished reading Ari's latest book, and it's basically the new version of the Musician's Handbook.
Okay.
Ari Hendershoff, and he's got the big blog Ari's Take, and it's got a really good following. And he brought this book. We bought this book after we took one of his webinars.
Okay.
His webinars were super informative.
Okay.
We took one on trying to break into the college market.
Okay.
Great webinar, very resourceful. I highly recommend his webinars. They're great. But one of the things he mentioned in his book, which just kind of led to Nashville, is that if you want to make it, you got to move to LA, you got to move to New York, you got to move to Nashville, you got to be or be in Chicago. And I really sat back and I don't, that's one of the old business models that I don't believe in. There are a couple business models that I just think are garbage and we need to throw them out.
Yeah, I think that's one of them. I think depends on what making it is for you, really, at the end of the day. For me, making it was when I paid my bills off of playing music alone. Because before that, I was doing other things that I disliked. So now I can do what I like. I work 20 hours a week. As the maximum I have to work, you know, and then I can have other side projects that I can, you know, fill up my time with.
You got time to do creative projects.
Whatever you want. Travel, do whatever you want. You know, there's a freedom to it that I think is making it in my world, because the most wealthy people I know have
working
freedom.
60 hours a week.
No, don't. What I'm saying, I mean the wealthy people, not the ones that are rich. I mean the ones that like, really have money, have freedom. They can go where they want, when they want, and manage their businesses from wherever they are. And freedom is really making it in my world. I mean, I would love to play sold out shows, you know, to thousands of people. Right now I play sold out shows to 150 people or 200 people, and they're incredible. And almost I go, do I even want to play, you know, 3,000 person places? It's less intimate. You know, there's a different energy. There's an energy to that 200 people in a room. You know, they can hear every nuance of everything going on, and they're close to you.
Beautiful ambiance.
And you're connected. Yeah.
You are connected. Yeah, we went to see Damian Rice at the Tampa Theater, and it was that intimate connection. And I don't know how many people the Tampa Theater sits, but it was beautiful just sitting in there and watching him on stage and being able to connect with everyone on the balcony.
Yeah.
And connect with everyone downstairs. You looking above, and you got the skyline, the beautiful stars, and yeah, above at the Tampa Theater, and it was just amazing. One of the other things that I hear repeatedly, and you play a lot of original gigs as well.
Yeah, I do my best.
And one of the things I hear, and I just put on a tour, and I dealt with this while I was putting on the tour. I sent Justin Grimes out to Colorado for a month. It was a great learning experience, I'm sure, for both of us. He'll be coming home after this weekend. He played 12 gigs in Colorado and Wyoming, stayed the whole month.
Awesome.
Traveled. I learned a lot from putting the tour on. One of the things I was experiencing by cold calling and putting on this tour was the typical response, well, how many people is he going to bring?
Right. Revenue.
Well, Justin's never been to Loveland, Colorado, so the opportunity to bring, I don't know, maybe 5 people for lucky who might just happen to see the Instagram post or Facebook post. How can we shift that mentality? How can we get, and this is not for cover gigs, this is more strictly related to originals. How can we get the mentality of an original music venue owner to start, not stop thinking about what can the musician do for me? What can he do for me? What can or she can do for me? But how do we get them to work together? How do we create and drive people into your venue opposed to the question being, well, I'm paying him $150. What's he going to do?
Right.
Any creative ideas on that?
I mean, I think the system in itself requires kind of help. It you need someone who has been to Loveland, Colorado before to play, and then Justin to open for him at different places on a tour. That's the way I understand it anyway. Somebody who's already made the rounds and been on tour with somebody who had already done that before. It's kind of like this trickle down where in 2015, this guy opened for somebody else who had been there before. And now people know him. And now somebody from 2016 is getting on, you know, and opening for him. And that's about networking and making, you know, building
friends. Making the connections.
Yeah, I think it's less about trying to convince somebody to pay you $150 or trying to show somebody ahead of time you're going to create a miracle, rabbit out of a hat by getting more than 5 people to show up from a city you've never been to. I mean, there probably are ways of doing it. Getting on the radio, local radio station, doing a morning show. You know,
we did a couple radio spots.
I don't know how much that contributes. That might translate into 3 fans. It might translate into 20.
I think it contributes a lot. People still do. Community radio.
Yeah.
Community radio is a huge help.
I think shows that have built-in audiences, festivals, whatever it is, would work better than, you know, this cafe in Loveland that's
going. My goal is to figure out a way how to communicate with the venue owner that if there's a greater opportunity for us to collaborate and work together, opposed to you just looking at one side of the picture.
Right.
And saying, how many people? How many people?
I think as a venue owner, it would make sense for them to at least contribute to promoting a show, whatever it is, you know, getting their network out. I know at the Attic in Ybor, My roommate, Kevin Lilly, has Rock Brothers in the attic. And it's an original music venue. And it seats 140 at the most, packed house. And incredible sound systems. It's a great spot. And bigger name artists are coming through there. But regarding what he does, he'll put into promoting. And he tells his friend network, hey, come out to this show. You've never heard of this guy before, but he's great. He sounds like blah, blah, blah. And people trust him to be a hub for that kind of thing, you know. And likewise, Tony Casori, his partner in the business, you know, he'll call me and say, hey, I got this guy coming through. He's awesome. You got to come check him out. And I think people like that in the community reaching out to their friend network.
To their network. Do you think that, does Kevin do that via phone? Is he making real?
I think it's real Facebook, and I think it's in person. I don't think he's calling people on the phone and saying, I mean, maybe texting him and saying, yeah, hey, you know.
I think we need to make better connections, networking, opposed to inviting. There's something more rewarding about a personal invite.
For sure.
Than over Facebook or sure. via Twitter or, hey, can you please like my video right. or email? There's more of a interconnection and people have the drive. When I get off the phone, I'm doing one of my first original shows tonight in Tampa. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend some time calling some people and trying to get them out to the bar.
Yep.
It's first original show. But what I really want to see is we start progressing and moving forward and working together with venue owners and booking agents. There's a disconnect between all three.
Yeah.
And there's always been that disconnect. Booking agents have bad names. A lot of venue owners have bad names. Musicians are regarded as lazy potheads. So there's
right.
that whole cycle needs to be tuned up, and we need to spend more time figuring out how to correct the problem. It's almost, in my opinion, we need to disregard everything we were taught.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of innovation for sure.
And start fresh
yeah.
and move forward.
Yeah, I think picking a city also where you have friends and family and help. You
yeah.
know, as an artist, you know, if I just put my finger on a map and say I'm going to tour there, I think that's less powerful than, you know, checking even my Facebook fan base and saying, hey, you know, I have people reaching out there saying, hey, we want you in Southern California. We have, you know, so I need to go to Southern California and play some shows there. And when I do that, I'm going to tap into my friend network there and do my best to get 30 people out to a small venue, you know, open a show.
I think you are the first person I've had on this podcast to talk about breaking down the stats of your Facebook page. Like really digging deep and seeing where your fan base is located.
Yeah, well, they're loud. If they like what you're doing, they're loud. They'll say, hey, and I had somebody else hit me up last night and said, hey, when are you going on tour? Because I have some friends in Nashville that they just heard your music and they love it. They want to, I think to have a great, it all stems from creating art that's authentic, that people can vibe with. When you do that, you do the good artwork, you put a good record together, and then that's your marketing piece. And not to venues, but to people, because venues want people. So I'm going to market to people. People are going to dig it. And then people are going to be like, hey, come to my town. Be like, I will. I can start by playing a house show if you want. I'll come to your house and play. You invite 20 of your friends. Everybody pays 10 bucks. I get 200 bucks.
House shows are great.
Yeah, they're great. They're a great way to penetrate a new market. And I think that's probably the best way to penetrate a new market. And then you go to the club. Because then you have a bar that's like, well, you're like, hey, last time I came, I had 20 people here. They're going to bring two apiece. Now I have 40 the first time I'm going to a bar instead of coming to a bar with, hey, I want to play your venue, you know?
Yeah, it's a tough draw. I started looking outside the venues my last tour. Started reaching out mm-hmm. to corporations.
Okay,
I had
yeah.
a lot of success with it.
Cool.
Seeing if they needed any music for an employee staff party.
Yeah.
Started reaching out to companies as a brand ambassador. The opportunity to put music's everywhere. There are people touring the country now doing nothing but playing house concerts.
Sure, I have friends that do that, yeah.
And that's great. So it's a great way to look outside of the venues. I just want, my goal is to find that venue owner who's ready to get creative and think outside the box and try to figure out how to get people in the doors.
Yeah.
And do it. Sit down, brainstorm.
Yeah.
When you get pen to paper and you really think about it, you'd be amazed how many different ideas you could come up. Who'd ever thought to do music at the airport?
Yeah.
And it's going really well.
Do we have it at the Tampa International?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were talking about Nashville. I was like, yeah,
no, it's
there.
Going. They do a Friday night flight series.
Okay.
And it's going really well. It's doing great.
It's news to me. That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's many outlets for the musician. I want to see the creativity get put back into it.
Yeah.
I want to connect with those vendors, and that's what this podcast is about. I want them to hear my passion.
Got it.
And say, hey, let me sit down with this guy and see what we can create, because you never know what you could put together.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think going back to the marriage of music and art, I have a friend of mine, Lisette, that we're going to do an art show, and she's going to do... we're probably going to do it at the Attic in Ybor, but because it's such a great venue. But we're gonna marry art and music on this one night.
I love it.
Where she's doing female centered pieces of art. Everything is female, and I'm going to work to put together four female acts that are going to perform during this art show.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and I think we were talking about having the song highlight different pieces based on the song and the artist doing it, so there's kind of like this extra
making those element. Connections yeah. that's where the thinking comes back into the ball game, where you can sit back and how much fun is that going to be to sit back and go, okay, I'm gonna listen to a dozen songs and sit in front of this piece of artwork and see what song I personally feel right. connects with this piece.
Right.
And then I'm going to contact that artist and have that artist yeah. play in front of that piece and play this song.
Yeah.
That is really cool. And that's where the creative thinking process comes. And when that happens, it organically spreads out.
Yes.
When you make that connection. Agreed. That is really
I think
cool.
that's difficult to do through the phone in Loveland, Colorado. I think it's something that starts here, you know. I think the creativity, I think finding a, first of all, and I hope they aren't offended by this, but finding a venue owner that is as creative as what we can be as artists is usually a little difficult. It's a different mindset.
It is a complete different mindset. And that's something I'd like to elaborate, because musicians have a different mindset than venue owners, and the reason being is the musicians a lot, and I don't want to generalize, because we work with some amazing musicians who are extremely smart when it comes to business.
Right.
Extremely smart.
Right.
For the most part, though, musicians don't think about the business side of it.
Right.
One of the things I try to tell everyone is put yourself in their shoes.
Yep.
Understand that, you know, they have to have a certain amount of sales coming in the register.
Absolutely.
5%, only 5% of the total night sales can get allocated over to the musician.
Right.
If you're giving out more than that, then you're losing.
Right.
You're not making a profit. Once you understand the business side of things, I feel that you can better approach business owners, and you can be on the same mindset with them.
Yeah.
Where you're understanding them better, and you know that you just can't go in there and say, well, you know, we're the best band ever. We're not taking less than $1,000 on a Tuesday night.
Well, yeah, again, I think really you just solved the issue is really being a partner with the venue. And really, you take the risk, because the issue is they don't want to risk. Why are they risking on an artist? Why isn't the artist risking on himself? You know, why would they? You know, but if an artist says, "Hey, I'm going to come in, I'm going to put a show together, I'm going to take whatever I charge, you get the bar sales, you know, let's make it a party,"
then I'm taking the risk also as an artist, but risk reward, you know, as opposed to saying, hey, you risk your money up front for me, who you've never met before, and going, okay, well, let's put an agreement together. You know, I think asking for a guarantee out of town is pretty tough. I think, say, I'm going to come play for free, or I'm going to sell my merch to whoever you have there, is more of a thing. And that's where the business mind of the artist needs to come to fruition. And you say, all right, I bought hats, I bought shirts, I have vinyl. You know, if you got a lot of hipsters in town, you want vinyl, you know, CDs, if there's old people, because young people, I don't even have a place to play fucking CD anymore. I noticed that when I burned my CDs and I bought a bunch of them, I was like, oh, I don't really have anywhere to test this. My car doesn't have a CD player. I can put it on my computer, maybe. But really getting a full business mind out of your artist is really, I think, the win. And taking responsibility as an artist. If I'm going to go into a new town, I want to have people there because I want to play for people. And I need to make sure I fund it by doing proper business.
Oh, absolutely. The more you know about that side, the more opportunity you're going to have.
Yes.
And it's just not the music business. It goes with everything.
Yes.
My idea, and I don't know where this came up with. Maybe it was derived from one of my podcasts or me just thinking off. My idea was, how can we reverse that? We need to teach musicians the business side. We need to teach them marketing. We need to teach them merch sales. We need to teach them cold calling emails. We need to teach them how to run their business.
Right.
But we also need to teach the venue owner some type of creativity and how art is made, how music is made. So I came up with this idea during launch to take an owner, go into their venue, an owner who doesn't know much about the music business. Bring a 2-3-piece band, maybe even a solo artist. Have them sit down and have them create a song with the artist.
That's a cool idea.
Write lyrics together. Have the artist put the lyrics together.
Cool.
With the owner.
Yeah.
And then have the owner watch as a musician works through the kinks of putting that song together.
Yeah, so they can appreciate what it is.
So they can appreciate what goes into it and how many hours go into it, and they can get a feel. Now, will this be completed over a lunch period? Probably not, but you can start by creating the actual lyrics of the song.
Right.
And it would be cool to have a musician actually show them, okay, this is how you write a song.
Yeah.
Opposed to, yes, you can put anything on a poem.
Yeah.
Or write a blog post.
Right.
But this is how we're going to actually write this song. This is my technique I use.
Yeah.
And create something. I think when you create something with someone, it holds much more value. There becomes an appreciation. And now that owner can understand where they're coming from. It sits in their head.
Yeah. I think that's cool.
One of my podcast guests, Jamie Salvatore, he came on the show, and he makes it a point to go out to lunch with someone from the music industry. Doesn't matter who it is. Once a week, he goes out with someone from the music industry, and his goal is to get one takeaway.
Cool.
Doesn't matter if the guy's competition or not competition, he wants one takeaway.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what we have to strive for. We have to be able to learn. That's why I wanted you on the show.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you.
Yeah, I wanted insight. So moving forward, did you have a chance to read over the stats I sent over from Streamline?
Not in detail.
No, all good.
I thought it was neat that they have those.
So
together.
Anyone who wants this, I will add this in the show notes. There is an excellent blog where the guy breaks down the stats. It's called MIDA.
Okay.
And he breaks down all the streamlining stats from Spotify, iTunes, Pandora.
For streaming music.
Streaming music. Okay. And he goes into different areas. So what's popular in New York, what's popular in LA, what's going on in Florida.
Okay.
But then he breaks down to songwriting, hip genre, and he goes through everything. And just recently, he brought one out on lyrics.
Okay.
And I wanted to throw these numbers at you. Maybe they'll be helpful. Maybe we can discuss them. 88% of music subscribers look for lyrics when they're looking for their subscriptions.
Okay.
So whether they're signing up for a paid placement with Spotify or Pandora or iTunes, when they're becoming a when they're getting out of the free tier and they're going into the paid service where you're paying $8 a month for Pandora, whatever it is now, right. 88% of them want to know that there's going to be lyrics with each song.
Oh, interesting. They want to know that they can see lyrics along with the song.
They want the lyrics to be added on there. So, yeah, so the song's playing and you could pull up, I guess, the song notes,
right.
They call them.
I mean, that's interesting to me because one of my favorite things is to watch white girls ruin rap songs by singing the wrong lyrics. So they're kind of ruining my life right now.
Oh, that's awesome. That is fantastic. That is great.
I think it's interesting they want to know lyrics. I mean, I put a lot of time into lyrics. I mean, that's primarily, that's the thing that I look at. And even when I was working on my record with Nico Moon, we were in my little shitty rental working on my songs, and he would say, I think we could beat that. And that was related to the lyric. That wasn't related to the melody or chord. I think there was one song, I think it was actually Karma's Kids, where I had the same two chords over and over again. And he's like, hey, we need a third chord in there somewhere. I was like, okay. But that's really the only thing we mentioned chordally, when we were developing the songs, the lyrics were the thing. It's like, let's make these, let's really bring these to a pinnacle. Let's do the best we can. Let's leave nothing on the table lyrically.
How many times did it take you to work out the kinks on it?
I mean, each song was different. One of the songs, California, we didn't have to change anything. Karma's Kids was pretty much done lyrically, but there were still eight other songs that there were slight variations to of changing. And then we rewrote at least one song called Fortune. I had this little idea and we kind of rewrote that, put that together. So, I mean, it took hours.
Words have a really heavy impact. One of my good friends he's a pastor, and he recently went to the National Championship of Public Speaking through Toastmasters.
Cool.
And he took third in the world.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
Guy's a phenomenal speaker.
So he never says,
Nope. No. No filler words.
And
the filler words were gone.
That's impressive.
But he talked about word choice. And he said as he got up to that level, each and every word you have to make so people hang on to it.
Sure. I mean, language is what we live in. It's the water in which we swim. It defines it, self-talk. I mean, when you get deep, it's like the things you say to yourself in your head over and over again, those you use words to do that. And you're either building yourself up or beating yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
You're creating goals with words. You're expressing love with words. You're expressing hate with words. We live in words. And so to not take time to make lyrics the best they can be, I think, is not being honored.
Yeah, it's really is amazing with words and lyrics and how powerful they are. And that's why I thought it would be a good opportunity to share these stats.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that musicians can realize, wow, this is what people are searching for. So why lyrics users get lyrics? 81% of them to know the words.
Okay.
To sing along, 72%.
Right.
To know the words is more prevalent than to sing along. Lyrics are important, 61%. To sing with friends, 34% of people. 70% of karaoke users are female. And that is why they subscribe, are paid subscribers.
Interesting.
To get the lyrics for their karaoke sets.
I mean, in karaoke, they give you the lyrics. So I think they're just kind of...
it must be...
They give you... That's the point of karaoke.
Yeah, but have you ever been to a serious karaoke hall? They're crazy.
I feel like that's oxymoronic. Serious karaoke. I love karaoke.
People go nuts. Yeah. They really, really get into it, and they... You get up there, and they're just pouring their heart over this song, and I'm like, man, this is no fun. They should be drunk right now and screwing up the song. That's the best part of it.
My favorite part is to change words. Yes, well, I'm singing karaoke. Yeah.
That is great. Colorado, by the way, if you ever tour Colorado, heavily karaoke bars.
Really?
Every bar in Colorado does karaoke.
I mean, I do every Tuesday with Tony Gregorio at Yardaville in South Tampa. You guys want to come out, sing karaoke? I'm there most Tuesdays.
Nice.
I have Tuesday night off. Why wouldn't I be there?
That's a good, you got a point. 31 is the average age of streaming. And this number's
interesting.
Good to know. It's...
Well, everybody under that is stealing it. And then at 30, you're like, I should probably pay for it. I have a job.
Yeah. It's also a good number to know because you could craft your song towards a 31-year-old much... If you were trying to get into synchronized licensing and you were trying to make money, that's a good demographic to know.
I'll tell you, I see... In regards to the money-making thing, I know streaming is not noted for being a moneymaker, but it kind of is in the exposure aspect. See, in where we are now, I think original artists are making money off the live show. If I can get you to fall in love with my song, if I can get you to hear my song, if I can get you to like it, then I can probably get you to pay for a ticket to come and see me, and we'll have this experience all together that'll be magical, and then you'll want to do that again and again, and you may even want to wear a t-shirt with my name on it, and that would be awesome. And that's how I survive as an artist, singing original music only, which I don't do now. I make money from playing covers, the majority, but I do make a good chunk every quarter selling out a show. And now that I have a record out, I'd like to do another,
What approaches have you taken to get people to buy your tickets for the Hideaway or wherever you're playing? How do you approach that?
I mean, picking the right venue is the most important thing. The Hideaway was wonderful. Holds about 80 people, 85. It's a packed house. That's where you start. You start, oldest trick in the book, sell out an elevator. You can only fit four people. I'm going to play the elevator. You guys come out. It's a sold out show. There's three people there. You pick a small venue. You play that. The smallest venue I played was a place called Genghis Cohen in Los Angeles. And it holds about 30 people in pews. Tiny venue. I got 15 people there. Felt like a show. In Los Angeles, that's impressive, by the way. If you've ever played in L.A., if you're not from L.A., to get anybody to show up is very difficult.
No, I've heard the struggles. We got a couple musicians out there, and I've definitely heard the struggles about L.A.
But picking a small venue at first and opening for people at first in those small venues, and that way you're kind of, if they can sell it out and you're playing to a packed house, you'll have, if you can grab... If 15 people out of the 80 buy your CD, you did a good job. You got people to, if you can get half of them to buy your CD, you did an incredible job. They weren't there to see you. You're a surprise. They're investing in you, a stranger that they met an hour ago. That's pretty good. So, small venue. I went from the Hideaway to the Attic. The Attic holds 140. Before that, I did one show. I did an album release show that was ticketed at the Dubliner in Soho. It holds 250 people. And we sold that out on a Friday night at like $20 a ticket. And I had a lot of expenses because I had to bring in a backline. I had to bring in sound. All of that to really raise the level of, and I'd rebuild the stage a little bit to do it there because it's not set up for original music. But then I just started.
Was that their first original show there?
I think probably one of them. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I'd been playing there Friday nights doing covers, so it was kind of a natural transition. Hey, I'm putting out an original record. We're going to sell tickets. Come and hang out. And we're going to start early, hang late. And it was an incredible... That was one of the best nights of my life. I started playing my song California, and the single was the only thing that had been out among friends, and everybody was singing along and throwing their... I was just like, oh, this is what it feels like, you know, for 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes. Felt like a high school kid on prom night.
That's a great feeling.
But it was incredible. And then when the Attic opened... Those are my friends that own it, so I chose to do shows there, and it holds 150, and we sell it out. I've sold it out twice now in the last 5 months. So we're just going to keep doing that. And then when that's the approach, though, to answer your question, is to pick a smaller venue. I didn't pick Skippers.
To start off with.
Yeah. I've played Skippers. I headlined an original show there, and I think we sold 250 tickets, something like that. But... 250 people at Skippers feels like an empty venue, whereas 250 people at the Dubliner felt like it was overflowing. And the same with the Attic. 150 people in the Attic. A packed house is so much better than more people in a bigger venue.
You ever do a CD release party at a record shop?
I've never done that. No. That sounds like...
Bananas would be a beautiful place to do it.
Where is that?
Bananas... Down is in St. Pete.
Okay.
I don't recall the address right off the top of my head. It's next to an amazing Italian deli, Mazzaro's.
Okay.
Just, you walk in and you're like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and set my alarm clock here because I don't want to be. They have two warehouses connect together, and they actually have a little stage in there. They have... anything you possibly think of, CD, record-wise, the warehouse, you could spend hours in there. It's just...
wonderful.
It's great, but a Saturday day or a Sunday day would be a perfect place to do a CD release party.
Yeah.
Or do your second CD release party. Right. Re-release your CD. Right. Whatever you want to call it. But it would be perfect... because everyone who is there on Saturday and Sunday morning is there to buy music.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's perfect. My plan is to do vinyls for another round, and I think it'd be great to have another party, and I'll look at that. Any reason to have a party? I'm in.
I like it.
Vinyls, birthday, whatever.
I like it. How is the expense of vinyl these days?
I think it was like $2,000 for 300 is what I was looking at.
That's not bad.
For the least expensive, yeah. The trouble is getting money out of that, like making a good business decision. Am I going to sell 300 vinyls? Maybe in a couple years as I tour around and that kind of thing. But
that's tough.
I don't have 300 people lining up to spend $30 on a vinyl, you know.
That is tough to sell vinyl. Yeah.
But I guess if I'm trying to make my money back, I need to sell 70 of them. So I think I could probably move 70, get my money back, and have the rest be cheddar on top.
You ever try to target your merchandise towards shows? So, for example,
specific shows. No, I mean just having merch at all for me is all. I've been terrible at that. Choosing something that I really like is the hard part for me. I get so indecisive about, I mean, musically, I know what I like, I know what I don't. When it comes to a t-shirt, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I know when I like a t-shirt, I don't know how to create a t-shirt I like. You know, it takes some. So I'm actually in the process working with Palmer, the individual who did the graphic design for my record. We're talking about putting that kind of design into a t-shirt, or a hat or something like, you know, looking at.
Years ago, Ken Apperson was talking about putting yoga pants together for women, selling them.
I love Ken.
Selling them.
And I love him for that reason. He wants to be in all the yoga studios and all the fit girls' bodies. I love it. Good for him.
Perfect. I don't think there's a girl in the world who wouldn't buy a pair of yoga pants at a show.
Is it going to be like those juicy shorts from back in the day? It's juicy right on the butt. It'll just say Ken Apperson.
Ken. I'm Ken.
Ken.
I'm Ken. Ken.
Shout out to Ken Apperson.
Oh, that's great.
I love him.
So what is in store for 2018? Talk to me.
Travel. travel. So okay. I'm planning to go to Europe in August. Whether I play shows out there or not, I don't know. I've reached out to a couple.
Check this out. We have a musician from Minnesota, goes to Ireland every year.
Awesome.
Pops in Ireland, doesn't have any gigs lined up. Guy likes to play music. Starts busking on the street.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, he's got 2 weeks worth of gigs.
Wow. Yeah, maybe that's what I need to do.
Step out of the comfort zone and step on the street. And
I'm looking at JT Brown and I were talking about going, just bringing a couple guitars, writing some music, riding the trains around Europe for like 3 weeks. So that's the plan at this point in August to do that.
Lots of song ideas from that trip.
I would think so. Yeah, he's great at, he just put out a record of like traveling songs.
That's cool.
That is wonderful. And he connected, Dylan Melcher did the video for him, that connects, it's all of his songs in a row, like the EP, all five songs, I believe, something like that. And it's a video, like a full length, kind of like what Beyonce did. She did like a whole movie with all her songs. That's what he did, but a shorter, less, you know, less, astronomical budget version of it. But planning on going out there and doing that. And I think Tony Cassori is going to come with us. And we're going to travel Europe for a few weeks, get the rail pass so we can ride around all over the place. And other than that, I've been talking to my buddy, you know Francisco Vidal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just spoke to him recently. So he's talking about getting me some gigs around the Southeast.
He's getting ready to take over all the music program for the Tin Roof.
He is, yeah. He's taking over the Tin Roof. So that'll help pay for it. But to get into original music video, singer songwriter spots there and bring my album and kind of share it the old fashioned way, play shows and, you know, share it with people, open for, like my buddy Steve Everett travels all around the country. So get on some shows with him. JD Eicher is coming to Tampa. We're going to do some show trading. I think I'm playing with him in May at the Attic, I believe. So that's been a cool thing. Since I could sell out the Attic, every quarter bringing in somebody from out of town to kind of play a show with me, expose them to my crowd.
Do you get to collaborate with these artists at the Attic? Are you playing songs with them, collaborating?
Yeah. Good. I mean, I'm an odd collaborator. I'm really like, I'm an open individual, but if I'm not inspired in whatever moment, I'm worthless. I might as well just be, you know, sitting there staring at the wall. So I'm an inspired artist. When I'm inspired, there's no stopping me. When it depends on what vibe's going on, I guess. But yeah, singing with them is fun. Always, Steve Everett always comes on stage with me. JT Brown always comes on stage with me for different songs. I'm less gifted at contributing to other people than it appears other people are gifted at contributing to me musically on stage. We did a New Year's Eve. We did it. I did it with, I'm drawing a blank. I'm looking it up real quick. I would have had this ready had I thought about it. It was Steve Everett and Tony Luca.
Okay.
And Tony travels the country. He's out of Nashville. He was awesome. Put on an incredible show, he and Steve both. And so at the end, after midnight for the New Year's Eve show, we all got on stage together and did some jamming, so to speak. And side note, I don't drink when I play. That's not a thing. I don't drink when I play. It affects my voice in a very negative way. So I just drink water. So all night, New Year's Eve, I was drinking water. And then at midnight, I was like, oh, this is the last little bit. So I announced from the stage that I was then drinking, which is a mistake. 4 shots of Jameson and 2 bourbons later in 45 minutes. And I hadn't eaten in 7 hours. Don't do that, kids. Don't ever do that. Spent my New Year's just in the green room. Green, basically. So that was that. But had an incredible time from what I remember on stage with them, being That's creative, cool. having fun, doing some rap songs. We all, maybe just with Tom Petty, everybody kind of took leads and had a blast with that kind of thing.
That's so sweet.
I love doing that.
That is cool. Where can everyone find your music? What's your...
I mean, the best way is whatever your preferred streaming method is, or if you want to buy it on iTunes. Truthfully, the best way is to come to a show. Just make a trip. Or invite me to come play in your living room. That's the best way to do it. But if you just look up Forrest Hoffer, F-O-R-R-E-S-T-H-O-F-F-A-R, Google me and you'll find everything. There's only one Forrest Hoffer in the world.
I'll make sure to add Forrest's landing site in the show notes, along with all his social media and his video. I really like his EPK video. Check it out. It explains a little bit of how the song came together, and it gives you an insight into the actual artist and the creativity. And one of the things I really liked what you said about that is singing together brings us all together.
Yeah. That's it. That's everybody has to have a purpose. If your purpose
passion and a purpose.
That's it. So my purpose is to play music, get people in a room together that would disagree about 100 different things, but in that moment, they're together doing something and reminding that we're all just human, having a human experience, and sing along with a song. That's the idea.
Yeah, forgo your disbeliefs and just get together and hang out. Well, I greatly appreciate you coming on the show, and
my pleasure.
Look forward to publishing this podcast.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to episode 16 with Forrest Hoffer of Hold That Thought. If you like what you hear, do us a favor, head over to the iTunes store or Podomatic, subscribe to the podcast, throw us a like. You can also follow and connect with us on Twitter at HoldThat77. If you have any thoughts, concerns, comments, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, shoot us an email at cjsevents1@gmail.com. I'm John Samuel, and I'm out.